your engines.
Houston, we've had a problem.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
I'm not a crook.
If you like your health care plan, you'll be able to keep your health care plan.
You're listening to Jim Paris Live, your source for the latest news on money, politics, prophecy, and preparedness. And now your host, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com and the author of more than 30 books, Jim Paris.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. Great to be with you again this Sunday. And I know a lot of people ask me about the show and kind of the studio, and obviously a lot of things have changed. So I used to have a big studio that was built into my former home, and now I'm doing something a little bit different here, and I'll let you in on a little secret. What you're seeing behind me isn't actually real. It's a little secret, and how I do it, I'm not going to show you how I do it, and it's not just, I'm not just using Zoom and just clicking a button, so there's kind of a little bit of magic involved in it. So pretty cool setup that I have, though, in my smaller place, which doubles as my studio. But I had a great week because I was in Detroit, and then I got super busy in my business. I had not been up to St. Augustine in a few days. So I thought, man, I'm going to go up to St. Augustine. So I had a really good weekend. I went up there on both Friday and Saturday, had a great time, you know, just walking around, petting dogs, meeting new people, seeing some of my friends up there. I have so many friends up there that own businesses. It's just a lot of fun. And then a friend invited me out today to St. Augustine. So a great day here as well. All right. So I want to talk a little bit about social media, jump right into that a little bit. So I'm experimenting with something right now. And if you're somebody that follows me on Facebook in particular, you're going to see this experiment. So here's my experiment. My experiment is, if I go Facebook Live, will I get more viewers, or will I get more viewers if I have like a higher production value? So I have this app that I subscribe to. It's like $8 a month, and it's called CapCut, and it's on my Android phone. And I'll be honest with you, I'm still struggling with how to use this thing, but I have figured out how to put in like some of these really nice little graphics that pop when you put a video up. And I'm starting to find that my higher production value, even just a small little graphic that, you know, announces what I'm talking about. Also, it puts in all of the captioning as well, this app. I'm getting more views this way. So this is kind of new, and it's a little bit of a different approach. And let me tell you why I really like this better than going live. I have had a lot of problems going live with it stopping in the middle of my live broadcast. This is not when I'm here in my studio. I'm talking about like when I'm live and I'm walking around and I'm making videos live. I have problems with it just dropping in and out, and I'm not really sure how to resolve that. I don't know if it's an issue with the company that I have my phone with, or if it's a Facebook issue, but it's really frustrating. But the other thing is, with the new phones, like I have the Galaxy Flip, and the quality and the resolution that you can get if you just record a video on your phone compared to the resolution that you get if you go live, it's incredible how much better the quality is. So, make a long story short, I'm kind of leaning towards doing more of these recordings that I then just post to Facebook that are not live, and then using this app to add a little bit of, you know, pizzazz to the post, you know, a little bit of graphics, some captioning, some things like that. So this is kind of leaning a little bit more towards the TikTok approach, which is TikTok tends to have a little bit higher production quality. And I know you can go live on TikTok, but I know that's not as big of a thing going live on TikTok as it is on Facebook. So just something different I'm trying. I'm curious to get your feedback on it as well. I did post a video yesterday where I kind of used this approach, and I was talking about getting paid as a writer. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that a little bit later in this episode. But you'll see an example of that if you go to any of my Facebook pages and you see the video that I posted when I was in St. Augustine yesterday. All right. So I throw this question out. I put it out on Facebook. And the question is a simple one, which is that even if you love Trump, do you think he can win? And what I'm getting to is, obviously, you have his core following, which is like, I don't know, maybe a third of the country is just like all in for Trump. Then you have probably a third of the country, maybe 40%, that absolutely hates Trump. And so you've got to convince these people in the middle. These are the kingmakers, the independents, the moderates. Does Trump have too much of a negative opinion right now? Is there too much of a negative view of Trump for him to be able to win? I just throw that out to you. I'm 99% sure he's going to get the nomination, but I just wonder if he can actually win in the general. And I'm just throwing that out there. I know I'm going to get some nasty emails from Trump supporters for even asking this question, but I think it's a legit question. And if we're in it to win it, maybe Trump isn't the person that can win it. I'm just throwing that out there to you. I don't know. I know that DeSantis is way behind in the polling for the nomination. So do we get Trump in as the nominee, but not get the White House this time around? I think if it's Trump versus Biden, I think we're absolutely in good shape. But more and more, I'm convinced that Biden is just not going to be the candidate in 2024. I don't see this guy having the stamina and the ability, and all of these scandals are starting to percolate, not just about Hunter Biden and all of that mess and the laptop and all of that, but also stuff that goes directly to Joe Biden. And now you've got the House of Representatives, which is under Republican control, and we now have some serious investigations going on into the Bidens. I just don't see, for a number of reasons, including his health and his lack of just vitality and mental clarity, I don't see Biden as the nominee in 2024. I think someone else is going to step up and Biden is going to step down. And that's what concerns me. Is I'm not concerned about a Trump up against Biden, but somebody that is younger and more vivacious and has more energy, I think that is going to be potentially a problem, because the country's pretty much split 50-50. And Trump does have high negatives as far as he does. There are a lot of people that will go out not to vote for a Democrat in November of 2024. They'll go out to vote against Trump. And we know that. And then with all the shenanigans in the elections, I mean, who knows what could happen? So I just throw that out to you. You know, your thoughts, put that up on my Facebook as well. Do you think that Trump can win? Now, regarding Trump's legal battles, which are getting to be so numerous that, I mean, I don't see any way he can possibly be found not guilty on all of these charges. Now, again, before you attack me with the emails and the messages on Facebook, I'm not suggesting I agree that he actually is guilty of any of these charges. I'm just simply saying, when you have multiple government entities charging you with multiple charges, and they've gotten these indictments, and sometimes they're in, you know, very liberal places like Washington, D.C., New York City, et cetera. There's possibly something coming, you know, in Georgia that will be an Atlanta grand jury. You just wonder, you know, is it likely that he's going to win in all of these cases? I don't know. But Alan Dershowitz says that Trump, his lawyers just quit, several of his lawyers. I'm not sure if all of his lawyers quit, but the ones representing him in a lot of these situations, these new charges, have stepped aside. And I imagine Trump is probably a very hard client to work with, because lawyers like to be in control. They don't like clients that have a lot of opinions, that want to take different directions than them. A lot of lawyers, honestly, are settlers. They're not litigators. They don't know how to fight. They've never fought. They've always settled. So I get that. And I could see why Trump would not be a good client for lawyers, because he doesn't want to settle. He doesn't want to plea bargain. He doesn't want to in any way play softball with these people coming after him. And I'm with him on that. I mean, if I were him, I'd be doing the same thing. But Alan Dershowitz makes some interesting points in a recent article where he talks about the fact that in a recent interview that Trump is having a super hard time getting lawyers, because there are these groups now that will literally go after any lawyer, any law firm that represents Trump. And Dershowitz even gave his own examples of this, how he was ostracized by friends. You know, without his stellar name and reputation, he probably would have been ostracized by Harvard as well, where he has taught law. And so a lot of lawyers are honestly afraid to get on Trump's team, because they will then be painted as racists and Nazis. They will be ostracized from their communities. A lot of lawyers have political aspirations. They want to run for office at some point. They want to get into, you know, different appointed positions in government. And being part of Trump's team legally is not good for publicity. It is interesting, though, because I've always thought, you know, a good lawyer is a good lawyer. And even if you take on somebody that is guilty, I mean, look at some of the people that rose to fame from the O.J. Simpson trial. I mean, all of those lawyers, you know, Johnny Cochran, Tom Mesereau, I mean, so many of them. I can't even remember all their names. The Innocence Project, what is his name? Barry. I can't think of all the names, but Kardashian. I mean, he was on Trump's legal team. All of the lawyers that were involved with Trump, with O.J. Simpson, all the lawyers involved with the O.J. Simpson case, those all rose to fame and nobody held that against them. I mean, even though I think most people thought O.J. was guilty. So I'm not sure why the situation with Trump is so unique, why Trump can't get lawyers. But it does seem to be an issue, and Dershowitz is comment on it. And it is unfortunate, because I think everybody is entitled to a defense in this country. And this idea of going after lawyers because of who they represent, especially in this case where, I mean, this clearly looks like political prosecution, any way that you slice it, really seems unfortunate. But an interesting article from Alan Dershowitz. Okay, so back to that article, or back to that video that I did when I was in St. Augustine yesterday, which is about becoming a writer. And so many people get in touch with me and they say, Jim, I want to write a book. I want to become a writer. How do I write books like you? And people know I've written dozens of books, and they want to know how they can get in on that. How can they do that? And I've got a ton of information on that in my online course. So if you're somebody that really does want to write a book, check out my online course, internetpaycheckforlife.com. Check out the course. Right now, there's a $150 discount going, so take advantage of that. But there's a ton in there on my publishing career, including, you know, being published with traditional publishers as well as being self-published. There's a ton in there on that. But one of the things that I pointed out in this video yesterday is that, you know, don't start as a writer writing a book. I think that's the hardest thing to do. It's like saying, I want to become a mountain climber, and the first mountain I'm going to climb is Mount Everest. Writing a book is very difficult, even if it's self-published. It's a big project. Most people will give up before they even get too far into it. So my thought is, rather than do that, why not start out with something that's more doable? Write an article. You know, write an article on the topic that you're interested in. And a great place for writers is Medium.com. Now, you don't have to join Medium.com to actually write for Medium and get paid. But I do suggest you join. It's $5 a month, which gives you access to all of the articles at Medium.com. You get unlimited articles. And there's a ton of articles there by writers that are making their full-time living writing. And it's a great place if you want to learn the craft of writing, not just writing, but making money from writing. You can actually go there for free. You can set up an account. You can start publishing articles and start getting money from your articles. And I think that that's a great way to get started. And maybe you'll write 50 articles or 100 articles. And then those articles could then be repurposed. And those articles could end up being the basis for your book. But I think it's great to write, to get the experience of writing, to get the feedback from people reading your writing, and also to make a little bit of money. And I think it's a much easier goal to write a short article maybe once a week than to be looking at a 1 or 2 year project of a book that maybe you'll never finish and you'll never get to that point of having published anything. So I really like medium.com. I put a video up about that on my social media yesterday, and it's a great place to get started. And I do talk a lot about sites like medium.com in my course, internetpaycheckforlife.com. All right. So if you take a look at cryptocurrency right now, so one of the big stories was that the Grayscale ETF, that is where you can buy Bitcoin as a stock, is now making some new highs. And this is really good news, not just for Bitcoin, but for cryptocurrency in general. That ETF was really hit hard in recent months, especially the last year and a half or so. But the I'm not sure it's an ETF. I'm using the wrong term. But the Grayscale Trust, the Bitcoin Grayscale Trust, it does track the price of Bitcoin, and it is seeing a lot of inflows now. So we're reaching another stage with Bitcoin. We go through these cycles where Bitcoin drops substantially, then it sort of hits a plateau, it levels out, then it takes off again. We're in that next phase of accumulation where it is going to start going up again, it looks like it. And the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, the stock symbol is GBTC. You can buy that through pretty much any broker. And you can do that through an IRA account as well, if that's something that you'd like to take a look at. And on the topic of cryptocurrency, Ripple XRP, if you take a look at the chart on Ripple, just doing fantastic. Take a look at a 1 year chart on Ripple, which it's currently at 49 cents. But again, we talk about this repeatedly, the fact that the lawsuit with the government, the Securities and Exchange Commission lawsuit against the parent company of Ripple XRP, appears to be very, very close to settling. And I know it's June, and I know we talked about it settling maybe back in March or April, but it really does look like it's going to settle. And we just had a settlement also with Binance and the Securities and Exchange Commission. So it looks like cryptocurrency, the government is becoming satisfied with sanctions and not as much focused on absolutely trying to shut down these cryptocurrencies. I think they have realized that it's whack-a-mole, that they're never going to shut down all of these cryptocurrencies. So regulation is the answer. And if you feel like one of these exchanges or one of these cryptocurrencies has run amok, better to sanction them, fine them, get them to agree to some future boundaries, rather than doing like an all-in game where you're trying to absolutely shut them down. So I think the next 6 months here of the year, cryptocurrency looks very, very good. All right, so one thing that I was able to work on for a client this week, which I found to be very, very fascinating. It's the first time I've done this, and it is using a reverse mortgage to buy a house. And this is such a cool idea if you are over 62 years of age. And I'm going to give you some actual numbers here. So let's say that you wanted to buy a house for $300,000 and you're over 62. So what you could literally do is put down about 60%. That would be about $180,000. And then you would buy that house. It's your house, and you'd have no mortgage payment for the rest of your life. How cool is that? That is using a home equity conversion mortgage, a reverse mortgage, for a purchase. And yes, I do that. And let's say that this is the one question people ask me. So I did that. I do that, Jim. I buy a house with a reverse mortgage, and then the next day I die. So then the bank gets my house and my family gets no money. Nope, that's not how it works. So you will get a statement every month, and your house has equity. Your house will have equity for years and years and years. My mother has had a reverse mortgage for 20 years, and she just recently reached the point that she has no more equity because she hasn't had a payment in 20 years. So yes, after you die or leave the house or sell the house, there's still going to be residual value there. And one of the cool things I can do, if this is something you're interested in, is I could actually give you a printout and actually show you the numbers. So you can say, hey, I want to buy this house. It's $400,000. What am I going to have to put down? and show me a schedule of what my equity would be in my remaining years. And we could do it all the way out like to the age of 100. It's pretty incredible. So this is a really cool strategy. Buy the house you want, no payments for life, using a reverse mortgage, a home equity conversion mortgage, as a purchase. Very, very cool strategy that very few people know about. All right, I continue to be fascinated, absolutely fascinated by this podcast called Scamanda, which is a play on the name Amanda. And it is the most unbelievable thing you will ever hear. And I want to just keep promoting it because I think there's a huge lesson in this. It is a young lady who fakes having a cancer diagnosis. She does this for, I believe it's 7 years, bilks her church, all of her friends, her community, even celebrities. And the amount of money that she defrauded was like well into the six figures. And she had a blog and she was doing social media and she was had her whole big church roped into this. It's really fascinating because the people that you'll learn this from the podcast, the people that uncovered that this was a scam were unable to get any information because of HIPAA laws. So this is almost like the perfect scam because you could go out there and fake that you have some disease and say that you're going in for all these different treatments and that you're flying around the country to be a part of these different medical programs and trials and so forth. And nobody can verify that that's true or not. And it's interesting because how they brought her down was with the IRS. So the IRS stepped in and looked, and they found out that not a dollar of this money that she had brought in, supposedly for her medical treatments, not a dollar of it went to medical treatments. Unbelievable. So she ended up in prison. I think they gave her, I don't know, was it 5 years or a 7 year prison sentence. But in any case, it is an absolute study on a sociopath, on a psychopath, somebody that can just completely lie and have no guilt about it, no conscience. It is unbelievable. It's called Scamanda, Scamanda. And you can just type that in anywhere you listen to podcasts and you can get, I believe there are 6 or 7 episodes out already. And I think it's an ongoing thing. So I think there's going to be more episodes coming as they reveal more and more about this incredible story. So this story is upsetting to a lot of people, and I get it. The student loan suspension of payments is ending. And so very soon, like as soon as this fall, you're going to have to start making payments again on your student loans. Now, there is one big thing that's still out there looming, which is the Supreme Court decision. So if the Supreme Court actually decides in favor of Biden's student loan forgiveness, then lots of people are going to have their student loans wiped out, up to $20,000 a person. That case has not been decided on yet. It's been heard, but the ruling has not come out yet. But under this most recent budget deal, the student loan payments will resume this fall. And this is a big deal because I know people because I'm in the mortgage industry and I see people's, debts and all that as part of my job. I know people with over 100,000 in student debts, student loans. And I mean, you're talking about monthly payments, even if you negotiate for the reduced payment. I mean, some of these people have monthly payments of $1,000 a month, which is huge. So this is like a mortgage payment. It's like a giant car payment or a rent payment. And those payments are coming back. And remember, the student loan debt, for the most part, cannot be discharged in bankruptcy. And they can farm it out to private collectors. They have as much power to come after you as the IRS, like literally to go after your bank accounts and your paycheck and all kinds of, horrible collection tactics. So you need to find out about this. Just do a quick Google search, get yourself caught up on the news. If you've forgotten about your student loans, you got to remember them now because the day of reckoning may be coming very, very soon. All right. Mike Pence has announced he is running for president. And honestly, I like Mike Pence. He seems to be a good Christian man. I personally don't have the animus towards Mike Pence that a lot of people do regarding his, supposedly on January 6th, he had some kind of secret power where he could have decertified the election for Biden. I don't believe that's true. I'm not convinced that's true. I don't think that I don't think Pence could have done anything, honestly. I think he was stuck between a rock and a hard place. And he did get a lot of legal opinions to see what he could do. And he was not given any legal opinion that he was in a position to not, certify or read out aloud, in the certification of the election. I don't think he had any choice. And it's just a shame that he's been vilified. I'm not so sure, that he is the best candidate. I don't know. I mean, I kind of lean more towards DeSantis if I had to, lean away from somebody other than Trump. If I had to lean away from Trump, I'd say maybe DeSantis. But Mike Pence has an interesting, he's got some followers, especially Christians, but a lot of people have it out for Mike Pence because of January 6th. And I honestly, have mixed feelings. I don't think that Pence had much of a role as vice president. I don't think, being Trump's vice president would have given you much of an opportunity to kind of establish your own name and your own following and your own accomplishments, because Trump's kind of one of those strong leaders that's out front that takes all the oxygen out of the room. But I don't know. Maybe Trump would Pence would be a good president. I'd like to see how he does in the debates. He seems like a super nice guy. He's a Christian. He supports all of the things that I would support, but he's not as tough and brash of a fighter as Trump. So that's all got to be factored in. But I certainly have no ill will towards Mike Pence, as do many people who are upset with him about the January 6th situation. Okay, so the home that I grew up in suburban Bridgeview, Illinois, outside of Chicago, I just got a message from a friend that it's up for sale. So it was a lot of fun. I went into Zillow, typed in the address, and there it was, up for sale for $289,000. And it's so interesting because my parents, my dad at the time was an electrician. My parents got married when they were 18 and 19, and my dad had been working as an electrician since he was 15, and we had a relative that was in the construction business, so he built the house. My dad did all the electrical because he was in that line of work, and I believe that the original mortgage on the house was $3,000, what they paid, and the house today is worth $289,000. So it made me wonder, I was thinking, so when my parents moved from Chicago, I think it was in 84 or 85, and I was remembering that they sold the house for $180,000 at that time. And I was thinking, well, now it's $289,000, and this is 2023. That hasn't really, I don't know, it hasn't had the appreciation as a lot of areas have had. I've told you my story here in Florida, the home that I owned prior to the divorce, our home we bought in 2010, and that house we bought for $125,000, and it is now worth over $400,000. So, the appreciation they had, obviously, from 1966 to 1985 was fantastic, but the appreciation from 85 to the year 2022, it hasn't even really doubled in price. So I was looking at Chicago real estate numbers, and obviously everywhere real estate's been going up, and that's not really because so much of real estate appreciation, but the devaluing of the dollar. So as the dollar becomes devalued because of all this free money that is given out, because of COVID and all of this, bailouts, all of this money, the value of money goes down. So things like real estate, gold, other commodities just automatically go up in value. It's not so much that they're rising in value. It's that the value of the dollar is going down. So that's why these things appear to be going up in value when they're really not. But if you look at real estate in Chicago over the last year, it has dropped in value 2%, which is really remarkable when you look at inflation, double-digit inflation, and then you've got real estate actually dropping in value in Chicago. So in real terms, that's more like probably a 10 or 12% drop when you factor in inflation, and that you've got a real dollar, you know, and cents drop of 2%. But when you just look at the overall trend, and this is what I get into a lot on the show, is the population numbers. If you look at the numbers, there is a net outflow of people out of these states like Illinois, New Jersey, New York, California. These are the states to stay out of because, I mean, real estate is a supply and demand situation. And a recent poll just showed that the number one place that people want to move to is Florida or somewhere like Florida. And here we are. And everybody wants to come to Florida, not only because of the weather, but, you know, the lifestyle here. We've got great weather, but we've got a great lifestyle. We've got the beaches. And there's a lot of areas of Florida that are still super affordable. And with the remote working trend, I think this is really the biggest game changer in the real estate industry, in the real estate, you know, markets, is the remote working trend. The idea that people no longer have to go through the hustle and bustle of the hour commute, riding the subway, riding the train, sitting in traffic on an interstate highway for an hour each way to work, or even, you know, worse than that. This is the future. People being able to work remotely. And why wouldn't you take your money, go somewhere where you can get more for your money, have a better lifestyle for you and your family? I think Florida is incredible. And if you're somebody that's interested in Florida, you don't maybe know where you want to move in Florida, but you want to, you know, look at Florida, get in touch with me. I have some real estate friends that are super smart and have access to the whole MLS for the whole state. And if you're not interested in where I live, which is near Daytona Beach, maybe there's another area, but I can hook you up. So get in touch. You can send me an email, the email that goes directly to my phone, whether you're interested in finding out more about mortgage financing anywhere across the country or real estate here in Florida, jamesLParis@gmail.com, jamesLParis@gmail.com. All right, that's all I've got for you this week. Thanks so much for joining us. God bless. Super excited just to be back on a roll here, doing the show for you every week. Loving it in the new studio here, my new magic studio with the big city behind me. Get in touch if there's a topic you'd like me to address or a question you'd like me to answer. My main email is jim@christianmoney.com. God bless. I'll talk to you next time. So long, everybody.